Hey friends, let me jump in here real quick to remind you of our sponsor, 25 Transportation and Solutions. That's 25 Transportation and Solutions. They give you quality transportation, delivery services that you can depend on, getting your freight to and from its destination safe and secure. Contact them at info@25.org. That's info@TWENTY5.org, or you can call them at 240-479-6376. See you out on the road. Now, let's get back to our episode of the Truth and Coffee Time podcast. Back to let you know that I really can't let you go. I'm too close to you, don't want no one else but you, so stay by my side, like I stay on your mind.
What time is it, Mink?
It's Truth and Coffee Time.
Hey friends, welcome to the Truth and Coffee Time podcast with Diverse Love. I am Denise.
And I'm Brian.
Get your coffee or whatever your cup of joy is and settle in for some bold conversations, some random topics, a few cuss words, and a whole lot of us. Brian,
let's go.
Hello, 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 everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Truth and Coffee Time podcast. I am Miss D and Mr. B. My sidekick is out doing sidekick-ish, but the show must go on. So I'm just so excited. I say this every time we have a guest on, how excited I am, but I am excited because, you know, you ask guests to come on and they can definitely say no. And for the ones who, you know, grace us with their expertise and share their journey and their adventures, and then they get to share it with you, I am just so excited for that. So today we have Miss Adrienne Goodwin with us, and we are amazingly excited for her. She is a passionate, results-driven hostage negotiator out of New York City. She has a proven record for helping organizations, entrepreneurs, and individuals to build stronger relationships. Her motto on her website, which is beautiful, is communicate, connect, and collaborate. Everybody know I love collaboration. Mm-hmm. At work, they call me the collaboration queen. So I love it, love it, love it. Dr. Adrienne Goodwin is an 18-year veteran of the New York City Police Department, educator at John Jay College in criminal justice, and a current detective investigator, and again, hostage negotiator. And she is a 2022 recipient of a Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award from President Joe Biden. And one thing that I love, because I am an author, she is an author. And so we're going to get into her book and what that journey was writing that book. But for now, I would want to say welcome, 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 Miss Adrienne Goodwin. Thank you so much for gracing our platform.
Thank you so much for having me. What a introduction. When people read that introduction, I'm like, who are they talking about? Yeah. How do you wear all of these hats? But it is amazing to be here. I'm delighted to share this time with you, and I'm looking forward to just educate, empower your community. So thank you again for having me.
Isn't it something, like you said, when you hear your bio or an introduction read and you think, oh my gosh, who are they talking about? But then it's, you do that work daily. But when someone puts it down in black and white, then it's like, my God, I do that work daily. Yeah. And you do it not thinking of a bio or an introduction or it being written down. You do it because you're passionate and it's from your mm-hmm. heart. And I'm pretty sure that I shorten it because of our time, mm-hmm. and there could be so much more, you know, written that we don't see. So yeah, that is, it's you. It's you, Dr. Goodwin.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, it is hearing it. You know, people are like, you know, write your bio. And I'm like, really? Yeah. That's probably the hardest thing for me to do is mm-hmm. to like talk about myself in that light. And I guess, you know, that's just me being humble and not wanting to sound braggadocious, but that's probably the most difficult part is writing your own bio.
I agree. I write show notes for the podcast, and I've been doing it now for, we've been doing this now for over a year. And I remember when we were researching starting a podcast and we were going to these master classes and just investing in this platform. One of the things that, you know, we would hear in groups and in the podcast community was doing show notes. You get burned out with, you know, doing the show notes. And it's true. It can be a task to do them. But what I find, I guess because I'm a writer, is what I find is when I do those show notes, I step back and I'm like, oh my gosh, we did all of that. We talked about all of that. And I got to really explore who this person was, you know. So you're right. You're absolutely right. Well, again, welcome. Again, welcome, welcome, welcome. And I hope I did you justice, but I'm going to jump right into it. And just, I want you to tell us something interesting about yourself that maybe a lot of people might not know.
So I am a mom of twins. Oh. I have twin girls. They are eight. Yes. Mia and Madison. I enjoy crocheting.
Really?
I enjoy quite. Yeah. People don't know that. Yes. I do the hats and the blankets and all the fun stuff. It's just therapeutic to sit down and do that. But yes, crocheting. And I love the water.
Okay, so I tried to crochet when my kids was little, 20 years ago, and I did good. I got up to the point where I could do like the oven mittens.
That's great. I didn't get that far, but that's a great.
So I got up to doing that. I'm not going to say they look good, and I'm not going to say that one mitten may not have been vastly bigger than the other matching mitten. But, you know, I got up to that point. And you said you love the water.
Yes, I do. That's where I spend my time at when I have my downtime.
Okay, so what's your zodiac sign?
Oh, Leo.
Ah, so yeah, I was expecting you to say like Aquarius or Scorpio or something that has. Yeah, because you said you love the water. I love the water so much. It's something about the water that's calming to me. Now, I'm not a huge swimmer. I know how not to drown, but I'm not a huge swimmer, but I love the beach. I love the water. I love the smell of it. I love the sereneness of it. It's like everything goes away. It just literally blows away when you're there. So I totally agree.
Yes. You described it perfectly.
Totally agree. So here's my next question. What was your favorite childhood memory? But then I want to couple that with this question. How would your friends and parents describe you? Like, what's your favorite childhood memory? And how would your parents have described you as a kid? Mm-hmm. And do they see that same person now today?
Yeah. So my favorite childhood memory was going to Disneyland. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to see it on TV, this magical place, this castle. Yeah. And then you get there as a little kid and you're like, oh my gosh, this is real, you know, to be able to just be immersed into this, this fantasy, right?
Yeah.
As a child. And I think what people would say about me is that I'm kind, I'm generous. And I think the same traits I had as a little girl, I can remember like people in the neighborhood saying, you're so sweet. Cause I would say, would you like me to help you with your bags?
Yeah.
Would you like for me to go to the store for you? And I'm still the same way.
Oh, wow.
I always think about other people before I think about myself. So that's probably could be a good or a bad thing, but I always care to help others.
Which is probably why you're in the field that you're in too, and in the law enforcement field, in that community, you know, helping others, that entrepreneurship journey that has taken you to communities, because you've always been like that. Like my next to oldest granddaughter, she's 14, and she deals with a lot of like sometimes anger, you know, issues. And we were just recently talking about maybe doing some anger management therapy with other teens who maybe, you know, do that, like having group session talks. And she said to me, she said, they call me Emma. And she says to me, Emma, she said, you'll never understand it. She said, because you have never been angry. You have been kind. Mm. all your life, like all the whole time I've known you, you know, she said, and I can imagine you have been like that when you were a kid, you know, and I had to really think about that, like look back and say, you know, was I, and you know, she was right. I've never been the type of person to get angry first. That's not to say I wasn't angry, but it was like never my first emotion, my go-to emotion, you know. By the time I got to angry, I'm already hurt, pain, my heart broken. Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it's amazing the things that we experience as children, how it carries over, whether good or bad, right? Trauma carries over, but just for those good character traits that we have as kids. Absolutely. It sticks with us. It does.
So did you know you wanted to go into law enforcement as a kid, being that you were one of those people that kind of helped each other? How did that journey start?
Yeah, well, I didn't know at a young age that I wanted to get into law enforcement. And it wasn't until I discovered Facebook, probably when it first started, that I had a classmate. We were in seventh grade together. He said, that's all you talked about in seventh grade was be a police officer. I'm like, really? Yeah, that's the same thing I said. I was like, I had no idea. So I guess I was following my heart. And when I graduated from college, I started teaching. I was a second grade teacher first for a couple of years. And then I went into law enforcement. But it has been such a great experience. I would never have imagined my career journey within law enforcement, being a woman, being a mom, being a wife, and just all the amazing opportunities that have been presented to me. Right. And life goes full circle. So, you know, going into law enforcement, my family's like, you're crazy. It's dangerous. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Right.
I would say that. I would definitely say that if my kids came to me, my grandkids came to me and told me they wanted to go. Now, I wouldn't stop them because I'm a veteran. Mm-hmm. Me and my husband both are military. My husband's Army. I was a Marine. And it's just as dangerous in those streets as it is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't stop them, but I would definitely have that risk factor, that conversation. So I can imagine.
Yeah. And as you should, my husband is military as well, Army. So, you know, they share the feelings that normal parents would have about their kids going to something that's dangerous. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as time went on, their feelings subsided about, you know, the risk factor as I begin to just kind of move up in my career. But then I always say, like, life goes full circle because I started out teaching and then midway into my career, I find myself at a, you know, at John Jay College of Criminal Justice teaching the next generation of aspiring, you know, law enforcement professionals and FBI agents and lawyers, you know, so I get to do both. I get to do what I love. And, you know, who would have thought or known that my journey would kind of go this way?
Yeah.
But I'm happy that it did. And I think that's just a testament for anyone to just follow your heart, right? There's no one way to success. There's no one way to happiness, right? It's just all about doing what it is that feels good to you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the higher powers that be, whatever that is for you, He will guide you. Like he That's will right. strategically place people in your life that would kind of get you that one step closer. So I'm truly grateful that I did take that path.
Yeah. And teaching second graders, you probably learn how to negotiate soon, very fast.
Absolutely.
Probably helped you a lot. Like, sometimes it's easier to help kids negotiate than it is grownups.
Yes. Yeah. But it's, there goes back to the kindness, wanting to help. Right. So patience, all of that is huge when we think about effective communication. Right. Yeah. You know, negotiation is always trying to look for a resolve at the end of the day. Right. Always, you know, valuing other people's opinions and their perception on things, being open minded. That just helps not just in law enforcement, but that helps in real life. You know, being able to communicate your thoughts and your feelings clearly, you know, and set your boundaries and try to find win-win solutions in your life. So personally, you would benefit, and also in business, right? How to get contracts, how to negotiate with people, how to get people to buy into you, how to be kind for people to come on your podcast and interview, right? Absolutely. It's all about a give and take. It's all about, you know, how can I find balance and compromise and collaborate? Right. So that we both can walk away feeling somewhat good.
Oh, I love this. I wrote down a couple quotes. especially when you were saying like communicating and compromise and collaborate. But you said something really key, Dr. Good, when you said looking for the resolve. Like, how do you get to the resolve? And all that ties in, like, the effective communication, you know, how you're talking to some people. Sometimes you could say the same thing three different ways, but if you say it with kindness and gentleness, people receive it better. You know, how do we get to that resolve? And I love that. I love that. I had to write that down.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's just being really tapping into who you are, but also listening to other people, because everything is surface, right? We think about the iceberg theory, right? You only see 10% of what's going on.
Yes.
So for you're like, I don't understand why this person is, you know, why she's going through all these emotions, why this person's not acting right. But the underlying issues could be depression, could be finances, low self-esteem. You know, these are things that show up in your workplace, in your school as an educator, in business. So really taking time to kind of unpack that. And that resolve won't happen in one sitting. It may or may not, but it's okay to table things and then come back and revisit it later on. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Ooh, Dr. Goodwin, you got me sitting here like, wait a minute. Wait, I'm going to unpack a lot of stuff when I get off of this interview.
Yeah, I truly, truly enjoy the world of negotiation. It's, you know, and it's all about just how you ask questions. Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story real quick, and then we'll go into the next question.
Go right ahead. Go right ahead. Yeah.
So my daughters, they love these famous Jamaican beef patties. Mm-hmm. And I know that you have and you have to order a dozen before a certain time so they could be ready for pickup. Mm-hmm. Now I'm leaving work. I'm traveling from, you know, Brooklyn to Long Island. I'm like, I missed the deadline. And I get in there and I said, is it possible that I can have a dozen of beef patties? Yeah. She went, she had the look, but I gave her power. I gave her the power to decide. And the gentleman behind me went, wow. I would have never asked that question that way. Because had I said, can I?
Yeah.
Well, it's a yes or no.
Yeah.
But I gave her power. Is it possible?
Yeah.
And she looked back and she said, yes.
Mm.
So just something as simple as that, right? Just as simple as that, just the power to communicate and just how you word your questions. You'll get what you want at the end.
you know, we use these analogies all the time, especially since my grandkids have been here with us. I call them my grandjoys, but since my grandjoys have been here with us, I am always trying to figure out the best way to communicate with them, because especially the teenager, she doesn't think that we know anything, because she don't think that we was ever a teenager, that I literally popped out at 50 something years old, you know? So I'm always trying to figure out that effective way to communicate with her. And just listening to you is really a play on words with them. You know what I mean? As it is with so many other people in this world, you know, today she went to the dentist and she has some cavities, and we've been, you know, on her for the last few months about taking care of her teeth. Brush your teeth in the morning when you get up, brush your teeth again before you go to bed at night. She only wants to do it in the morning because she doesn't see the reasoning behind why we got to do it before we go to bed. You know, I'm always telling her, you know, floss, do this. Mm-hmm. And so we get to the dentist today, and the dentist is like, you have cavities, and now we got to make these multiple appointments now to take care of these cavities. And you better hope that it's not bad, because we could have a root canal, you know, this whole 9 yards that we're going through. We get in the car and she's devastated and she's scared because, you know, they got a numb mouth and all this stuff. And then she's like, why? I don't understand why. I don't even eat that many sweets, you know. And then I looked at her and I said, there's only one reason you have cavities. There's only one reason. It's the same reason why this happened, that happened. It all boils down to one reason. And she looked at me and I said, Aunt, what is it? She said, because I don't listen. Just don't listen. You don't hear me. You don't listen, or you don't apply what, you know. So, but I also had to think, am I communicating things to her? And so just listening to you, how you position your word, and you said, I gave her power. You didn't take it from her. You gave it to her. And so she felt more in control of how she answered you.
You know? Yeah.
So no, I love that.
Yeah, I'll give you one tip. So you want to mirror what they're saying. And every time you mirror someone's feelings, you want to make sure that you add the emotion with it. So you just, you'll say, so what I, it sounds like you're very upset that you have all of these appointments because of X, Y, and Z. And what you're waiting for is the yes.
Yeah.
Once she say yes, that means she understood you and you understood her. Like, you should never move forward in any negotiation without an understanding. Even in personal relationship. So what I just heard you say is that you're frustrated, you're upset because you don't feel like you're being heard. Is that correct? No, that's not quite. And until you both are in agreement about what the issue is, then you move forward. And then the other tip is you only address one issue at a time.
Oh,
it's so hard.
Well, I failed. I have failed already. I failed. Look, it's over. I've already failed.
You got it. You got it. You got it. This is great, though. That was, I love how that went off into that direction, because I think people really, truly, everyday people need to learn the importance of leveraging negotiation skills to see the growth in their personal and business life. It's powerful. It's a powerful tool.
I love it. And so since we're still in that vein, let's talk about keeping that same thought pattern around entrepreneurship. What are your thoughts around entrepreneurship, and how can that segue right into being a successful entrepreneur?
Yeah, so there's three things. There's three pillars or three pillars that I like to use, and I'll do the first one. The first one is to communicate. You want to communicate. You want to be clear in what it is that you want and what you need and what your boundaries are. So that requires you to do the inner work. As an entrepreneur. Then next is to connect, right? Connect with a community of people that share your similar thoughts and feelings, people that can nurture your growth, right? Finding groups, finding, you know, tapping into podcasts and books, feeding what it is that you want to do. And then next is collaborate, right? Understanding the importance of building strong connections with people. Right. That's the only way you're going to grow as an entrepreneur. And then when I think about negotiations, there are three E's that we use in negotiation that can help someone grow in their entrepreneurial journey. And the first one is ego depletion. Right. As a negotiator, it's never about me as a person. Like, I have to suppress my feelings and my emotions every time I'm interacting with someone. It's not about me. And I think people take things so personally that they can't see past what's in front of them. So get rid of the ego, be open-minded, and let's step in. So once you have the ego depletion, it's empathy, right? It's being empathetic. That's important. I think people, I don't even know that word still exists in a dictionary for some people, but it's such an important and powerful tool that if we utilize. And And I always say, you know, negotiation is not about this. It's not about manipulation. It's not. You truly are authentic about what it is that you do, and ethics. That's the last E, plays a huge part. So if people don't believe in you, believe in your product, they're not going to invest in you, right? Some people can invest in you and not even use your product. But because you have those E's, right? You're not operating with the ego, right? You have empathy, you care, you're passionate, right? And then you know how to, you know how to collaborate and work well with people. People buy into that. People want to know who you are, what do you have to offer, and why should they care? But you as an individual have to define that for yourself before you can get people to buy into you.
I love it. Buying into the why, who you are, what you have, but why should I be that person to? And you're right. I support a lot of especially small businesses. And sometimes I will purchase things from small business that I may not necessarily need or use, and I'll pass it on to someone else. But it was more important for me to show my support. you know, for that person. And you never know what circles you are in. I told you earlier that I slid in here like with 15 minutes to go to the shower. I had an event at the Boys and Girls Club and I wore this t-shirt of this line called A Meaningful Mood. And I love them. They are a Christian-based retail merchandiser. And I love their shirts. Now, I have shirts in my of my own. I have mugs of my own. And I still love their shirts. I rock theirs more than rock my own. No, that's fine. And I was out and about today. And this lady, she taps on the window. She wanted me to roll my window down. I was like, hi, how are you? She says, I just wanted you to know you have on my best friend's t-shirt line. It's just, it's a small world. It is a small world. And she says, I just wanted you to know that. And I said, yes. I said, I love her line, you know, and I was just going on and on about her. And then it dawned on me, it's not so much the line as it is the person and the why she does it, you know. I love that. Love it. Thank you. So you wear so many hats though, Dr. Goodwin. Like you're a detective, investigator, hostage negotiator, author. You do workshops, you help other entrepreneurs, and you're teaching. You know, you're teaching the FBI agents, the lawyers, you know. I'm not going to ask you how do you keep it all straight or how do you balance it yet. What I do want to ask you is, can you take us back a little bit on how that journey started?
Yeah.
And also, what was the first dream out of all that? What was that first dream that you wanted to tap into?
I think the first dream was just helping. I think it was just finding a career that fits with my personality, fit with my desire. And teaching the kids into law enforcement, that was the track. Started out as a patrol officer. I had a partner in the car, right? You answering a 911 jobs. You go into all different type of scenes and accidents and it rain and you get food and then you get a 911 call and you can't eat anymore. You know, just all of the fun stuff, right? Yeah. And there's no such thing as two nights being the same. There's always something different going on.
And how long did you stay on patrol before you...
Only 2 years. And then a position opened up in a plainclothes unit. So I did street narcotics enforcement unit. So just focused on a lot of the drug prone locations within my geographic area and did a lot of search warrants, working with the district attorney's office. Did that for about 3 years. And then I put in and had, you know, you got to go before a board and have it, you know, have to have an interview.
Yeah.
I put a detective squad. So like special victims, that's pretty much like, you know, wearing the suits with the gold shield and, you know, investigating the cases and the grand larcenies and the robberies and homicide. Yeah. All of that stuff was so much fun. And I learned a lot. And then in that time, so I'm still a detective. I have 18 and a half years on.
Yeah.
I've been a detective since 2010. So a good amount of time. And within this time, 12 years, I joined the hostage negotiation team. It's, you know, a special invitation.
Yeah.
And you, so if you think about the NYPD, there's about 34,000 personnel. Mm-hmm, and this hostage team, it's about 100 or so.
Wow.
Of us that free.
So you had to get invited to apply for that or?
Yeah, you do, because you just don't want anyone, right?
You
want one who's empathetic, right? Someone who's open-minded, because you're dealing with people at their most vulnerable state.
Yes.
You're dealing with people that's on the top of the bridge that want to commit suicide.
Yeah.
You are dealing with people who are emotionally disturbed, who didn't take their medication, who may find themselves barricaded with inside their home. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with perpetrators who don't want to go back to jail, so they barricade themselves with their families. Like, all of those are hostage cases that you deal with. So, you know, going through that training was a great training, learned a lot about myself, but you want the right people. You just don't want anybody in these sensitive roles. So being trained as a professional negotiator, I've been on some quite interesting scenes, and I'll just share one. I ended up getting an award from the American Suicide Foundation for saving someone's life. It was a 5-hour negotiation with a barricaded, emotionally disturbed person. And I was the negotiator that was talked for 5 hours. He was barricaded behind a door. And this was the first time that the NYPD had used a drone, because this took place downtown Brooklyn, just painting a picture, downtown Brooklyn, high rise residential building, you know, bay windows open.
Right.
So they was able to use the drone to show where the gun was being placed, you know, was it by the door, was it sitting next to him? And of course, with the assistance, always with the emergency service unit, who's always there making sure we got heavy vest and the helmets and all of the barricades, and was able to communicate with him. And just think about like that roller coaster of using those negotiation skills for 5 hours, you know, you sound nice, hang up, you know, phone disconnect. You know, I don't trust you. You know, just, I don't like the police, you know, that, that type of, you know, and, you know, just trying to find hope. So, you know, prior to the negotiation, I interviewed his family members and try to find out who he liked, who he didn't like.
Right.
Going through marital problems, going through a divorce. And, one of the things that his brother shared is that he's a great dad.
Yeah.
And he's a baseball coach. Yeah. And as I'm talking to him, once I lowered his that intensity, once I was able to bring it down and be able to have this rational conversation with him, I said, hey, your son needs you.
Yeah.
No, he don't. I said, yes, he has a baseball game coming up.
Yeah.
You a great dad. You a great dad. Let's get you to help, you know. And over the time, it worked. It worked, and he was able to come out and then go to the hospital and they get the help that they need. But, you know, in that case, it's not about ego, right?
It's not.
I got to suppress all of my feelings. It's not about
me. Emotions.
I can't take things personally. You know, it's all about how do we get this person to behave in a way that's favorable, right? How do we get this person to have this outcome that we're looking for? Yeah. And that's the most important thing.
Oh my gosh. So you know, you got me all messed up right now. So, so I can't I can't suppress my emotions half the time. So, but just to know that you were able to stay on that phone for 5 hours, and you have to be on your game for 5 hours. Like, you can't slip, because his life hangs in the balance. So you can't slip. So thank you.
Thank you.
You, because I've been very close to people who, wanted to just end it. And this just felt like this world was not for them, you know. And I have friends who parents have taken their lives, you know, and they didn't know, like they didn't see it coming. But then when they sit back and think of it, it's like it was always there, you know. So thank you so much for stepping in for them. So you said something real key in there, though. You said getting them to trust law enforcement. With the environment as it is right now around law enforcement, it's very hard. I hear my teenage grandjoy saying, I said something one day and I said, well, if you're ever in trouble, you got to call the police. And they were like, no, we're not calling the police because we might get hurt. And I can remember growing up, call the police. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And now for them to say that's not their first thought to do. That environment is so volatile and hostile. How do you combat that? How do you handle that? And I know that kind of bridges into why you wrote your book too.
Yeah.
But how do you handle that?
It's tough. It's heartbreaking. And I understand why they feel the way that they feel.
Yeah.
I'm not oblivious to what goes on in a lot of our communities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I know that's one of the reasons why I started teaching at that level with the college students, because I said to myself, I can't change the world, right? But I can change one encounter at a time. So every student that walks through that door, they're going to see this Black professor. I probably, you know, I brought my kids up there. I have my husband come and teach. So they get to see the human side, like, wow, like you're really cool. You have your family. This is a career. I tell my story. And I'll have kids that say, I don't want to be a cop in the beginning of the semester.
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. But as the semester ends, they like, if I can meet people like you, then I want to do that. So I've had so many students who are now on the job with me that were my students.
Yes.
Had no interest in being a police officer, maybe like management and, you know, that, you know, research, things like that. But not a police officer. So if I can just continue to do that, mm-hmm. I'll make a difference, because now they were now pass the torch.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll become that good cop. Right. And good cops don't like bad cops. We just don't, you know, we have a family. We want to go home. We want to come back to, we want to be safe. We want to treat people with respect and dignity. That's why people pay us. That's why the city pays us. Right. Yes, it's to really embrace the cultures, understand people and their needs, mm-hmm. and get rid of the implicit bias that exists.
Yeah.
That gets in a way from you really bridging that gap. So there's a lot to unpack. Of course, departments have made tremendous strides.
Yeah.
And tremendous strides.
And what you said is so key. We have friends who are in the law enforcement. We have friends who are detectives, policemen, you mm-hmm. know, special units, you know, hazardous training officers. And all of them say the same thing. Training. This is happening in a lot of places because of lack of training, mm-hmm. you know, and not just any training either. They would say they have to have the right training. You know, and for just listening to you and what you're pouring into your students, it looks like they're getting that training. And like you said, one encounter at a time, because one goes to two turns to three, absolutely. Three turns. So it becomes this trickling effect. And before mm-hmm. you know it, each one teaches one. You're teaching them, and then they're passing that teaching on. So
yeah. And I teach police and diversity. So, of course, mm-hmm. I'm unpacking the myths mm-hmm. and stereotypes as it relates to African-Americans, Hispanic yeah. culture, Middle Eastern, mm-hmm. Asian, Pacific Islanders. Like, we're unpacking the history and what brought us here.
Right.
How that looks within law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Slave patrol. Like, we don't even got it. You know the history. Mm-hmm. And it seems to follow us. But then what can we do as a community to kind of be on this two-way street to bridge the gap? So, you know, within law enforcement, I also am a board director for PAL. So that's Police Activity League. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're just a great way to be in a community for the kids to interact with police in a non-enforcement way. Mm-hmm. There's so many national night out that happens all over the country at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of great programs for the community. So, you know what? I'm going to bring my kid out. Mm-hmm. Right. So we have to disrupt the communication that we're having about the people that serve our community and our own homes.
Right.
So that they don't feel the way that they feel. Right. And it, let them develop their own emotions about that based on their interactions,
yeah.
not based off of your experiences.
Yeah. My husband says, he reminds me when we have this conversation, he says, you know, when we were growing up, the policeman was a part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
They were part of community. It wasn't a police will look at you and go, you know, I know your mama. You know, you're mm-hmm. doing wrong. You know, they were intricate part of the community. You
yep.
know, he says a lot of times now these polices, they're not a part of that community,
no.
you know, so they don't have a respect for the community. And then mm-hmm. they don't know that Johnny is autistic and that's why he act like this, mm-hmm. or this person is this and that, because they're not integrated into the community where we had policemen that knew our mamas, knew our daddies, our grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were not taught to be afraid of them, because we knew that police officer right there lived right down the street
in the
community. You know what I mean?
They knew the entire family. But, you know, we joke when we think about where law enforcement is going. Mm-hmm. If we don't disrupt this communication, if we don't build the relationships, what happens 10, 15 years from now? Like, there's already a recruitment crisis, yeah. right? Just with the times that we're living in.
Right.
We're not even the fastest growing group in law enforcement, right? It's not us.
Mm.
So if we don't change that, then we're never going to reflect our community.
Mm-mm.
If we, I'm pointing to us, if we yes. don't change that, we're never going to reflect our community and have the manpower that law enforcement agencies need to have, because people don't not want to become police officers.
Yeah, because we got to disrupt what the world is thinking is the norm.
Yeah.
We got to disrupt it. I just bought this book by T.D. Jakes called Disruptive Thinking. And although it's really taken from a theological aspect, it really is, it really mm-hmm. is true for so many aspects of the African-American environment. We have to disrupt what the world thinks is normal, you know, and really kind of go in there and make a statement and say, hey, you know, this is not normal. And it never was normal.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you know what? Like, contrary to what people think and feel about law enforcement, people love police.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People love police. Like, I was assigned, I had to do patrol in probably one of the worst areas, high crime areas, I should say, not the worst, high crime areas. And everyone that walked past said, thank you. Thank you for your service. A little boy gave me like a religious pamphlet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's only when we think about precision policing, it's a small amount that's causing the most crime within our communities.
It's in pockets.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, it's in pockets. Absolutely.
And because everybody got a camera, everybody got a phone, and media just kind of takes it and blows it up to this huge thing.
Perception.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's all perception. And you know, back in the day, there was no phones, no camera, no. You know, me and my husband joke about, before we knew somebody was talking about us or wanted to fight us, they either had to pass notes in school or they had to tell this person who had to tell this person. By the time it can start at 9 a.m. By the time it got to us, we already at home and we didn't even know we were supposed to meet them at the playground at 3:00. You know, people didn't have access to you like they have right now. These kids have access to each other to torment them, you know. So I agree. And as we're talking about kids and authoring and police force, tell us a little bit about Twins in the City, because I know you're using that platform to also help mm-hmm. bridge the gap between community and law enforcement. So tell me a little bit about that. And show the book. Yes.
So this is the book. So this is Twins in the City. Let's mm-hmm. learn about police officers. And it just says twin sisters, Madison and Mia, take mm-hmm. a trip to the city with their parents who are police officers.
Yeah.
They explore all the different jobs police officers do in the community while also learning about the many ethnicities that make up the law enforcement culture. Mm-hmm. So this book was birthed out of my daughter saying, what else do police officers do? Right. Like, I know they catch the bad guys, but what else do they do?
Mm-hmm.
And then also the students at the college, once they got a chance to know me, wow, I've never met a female police officer.
Mm.
I've never met a detective before.
And especially a female African-American.
Those subunits. I've never met a hostage negotiator. So I said to myself, if you're 22 and you've never had this interaction, I think law enforcement is missing a huge opportunity to engage early on. Yeah. You know, so if we can disrupt the positive interactions that law enforcement should be having and our community should have, just that imagery alone for our young readers, what is that going to do? Mm-hmm. And it was important for me to highlight the diversity within law enforcement. So you're going to see an officer with curly hair, a black officer. You're going to see a female wearing a hijab. Some of my students in college said they never saw a police officer wearing a hijab. I'm like, I need to have that in a book, wearing a turban. Yeah. You know, so you get to see this colorful world, right? This tapestry of what makes us all unique inside of this little book. This will open up dialogues with little kids and go, oh, okay. And it kind of almost sealed the deal. I did it's like a career day mm-hmm. at one of the local high schools. And a young lady walked up to the table and said, I would like to be a police officer, but how can I? And she went like this. She pointed to her head. She's like, I wear hijab, you know, and I'm like, oh no. And I begin to show pictures and, you know, I have friends on the job mm-hmm. and she go, I've never seen this before.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So the power of the image, the power of representation that little boys and girls can say, I can see myself. Oh, okay. A canine officer. Okay. I didn't know I can love dogs and maybe become a police officer and then be a canine officer, mm-hmm. you know, so it opens up this whole, unlocks this world that, that exists within law enforcement, because we only see, you know, cops chasing the bad guys, you know, you see the sensationalized images mm-hmm. of law enforcement. But I always tell people, if you want to be a lawyer, you know, come on a job, get a scholarship.
Yeah.
If you love, you know, did equestrian. You can ride the horse. If you love computers, you can do crime analysis, crime mapping, data. You know, if you love forensics, you can work in the lab. OMG, there's so many opportunities. You love to teach. Like I got offered to teach in the police academy, but I wanted to, you know, be more, you know, be in the streets. But all of those opportunities are there.
Yeah.
But of course you have to, you know, boots on the ground, you know, you got to do the work and then those opportunities will open up. But, and that's just what happened.
I love the different avenues that you're exploring, because that's all a part of diversity, you know, diverse thinking, diverse skills, diverse ideas, diverse avenues within this. It's not just about being a police officer. It's not just about being law, because there are so many things that are needed within that umbrella, you know? So I love that. I love it, because what you're doing is you're opening up this whole new world. You know, and like you said, of course, you got to do your time. You know, you got to put your boots on the ground first. But then after that, you know, it's like any other job. The world opens up to you. And now you forget it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My husband was military. Mm-hmm. Then he came to police. He retired at the age of 40.
Yeah.
Now he has his own security company. Yeah. It's called, you know, it's called G&G Security Group. We provide executive protection for high net worth clients. And he's been able to travel the world from Jordan to Italy to Abu Dhabi, you know, being this executive protection for clients is like, so his body of work started from the army. In Bosnia, right? You know, like all of these specialty units, and then you transition into law enforcement. So you figure you got 25, 30 years just in this, you know, risk mitigation and, you know, logistics, you know, the talk, right?
I do.
And all of those skills are so important with dealing with people.
Yeah.
Being level-headed, right? So it's been a great, you know, it's amazing how you can look back at your life and certain pieces don't make sense.
Oh, girl.
And then when the picture frame starts to come together.
Yes.
And then the bow wraps. You go,
oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. That is why I went through this. Yeah. Right? Like that is why I went through that. Like it all makes sense.
I love it.
But you never know unless you just appreciate the moments, right? Like you think about climbing a mountaintop. You're not thinking about getting to the top of the mountain. Right. You're thinking about the trail. You embracing the view, right? You make little stumbles as you go, but that's the beauty of life, is truly trusting the process. And when you get there, you go, I got double for my trouble.
This is crazy.
It was over. Oh,
I love that. My we was watching the World Cup. My oldest grandson, he is a soccer player, very high performance soccer player. We're so proud of him. And we were all looking at the World Cup, and before the World Cup started, I called him and I said, you know, Trey, I said, who you got in the World Cup? Who am I supposed to be rooting for? Other than USA, what country am I supposed to be rooting for? Because we already knew USA wasn't going to go as far. They went further than what they probably expected to go. And he says, Argentina. And I said, okay. You know, and so the first time Argentina, they lose. And so I call him the first game they lost. And so I call him and I'm like, Trey, like you told me to root for Argentina. And I said, they've already lost. He was so calm. He's 16 years old. He's so calm. All he says in the phone, he says, Emma, trust the process. And I'm like, boy, he says, Emma, trust the process. That's all he kept saying. And Argentina ended up winning the whole thing. And I'm like, hear this. Oh, this, he's wise beyond his years. You know, he's like, trust the process.
But you have to truly believe it. You have to truly believe it. And I'll just share something. This is not even on a map of to discussing, but having my twins, it was almost a 3-year journey. From the surgeries, myomectomy, this thyroid, you know, everything that could have happened. And I remember my doctor saying, why are you not getting pregnant? Maybe there's scar tissue. So she sent me to this ambulatory. He did the procedure. He came back and he said, one tube is blocked and the other tube is partially blocked. And I was laying on a bed And I just felt the tears like roll down my eyes to my back. And I remember the nurse coming in and she says, "What is your end goal? Your journey is not going to look like nobody else's journey." And then she said, "Have you ever heard the poem Robert Frost, The Road Less Traveled?" Right? She was an angel. From that moment, I said, whatever it is, whatever I have to endure to get to that goal, that is what I have to do.
Yes. Yes.
And because I trust that process,
trust I can in the sit process
and look at Mia and Madison, 8-year-old twins.
Sure.
Because I didn't give up.
Yeah. He kept saying, trust the process. He said, "Emma, sometimes you have to lose to win."
What? That's what? Look, I had my daughters on we did an IG live the other day because, you know, just getting them to
be
comfortable with speaking.
Yes.
Madison said, I have two quotes. And the first one was, run your race. She said, no matter if the person is ahead of you, don't try to catch up. Run your race. And I said, wow.
Yeah.
How many times do we compare our journey to somebody else's journey?
And it causes you to stumble when you're looking at other people and comparing yourself to other people. Absolutely. Tell Madison this. So my 14-year-old, she is a high performing track runner. She's only ninth grade, and this is her first year ever running formal track, and she's made it all the way to regional first year, you know. And she run hurdles. Never in her life has run hurdles before. And so they've been teaching her and training her because they said she seemed to have a natural gift with hurdles. And so she's been running them and she's been killing it. And she's been beating people who are 11th and 12th graders, and she's a ninth grader. This last, when you said, when Madison said this last race she ran, she was running against some of the top performers in the region. And she was in third place and she had it all the way. And she looked over to the person running next to her and she stumbled. And she ended up coming in, and she ended up coming in fourth place by like a hair. And we have it on film and we showed her right here. You took your eyes off of the ball. Like you stopped running your race.
That's powerful.
Look at someone else and you see her body hobble, stumble, and she ended up coming in fourth like a hare, missing that spot to qualify. And we were telling her, you have got to focus on you.
Absolutely.
You're running against you. You looked over and saw someone out of your peripheral and it took you off of what you were doing. So your daughter is wise beyond her years because it is very true. Very true. So keeping with that, keeping with twins in the city and law enforcement in the community, what barriers or challenges have you come across with you trying to bridge that gap between the community and law enforcement? Like what headwinds has been your way trying to get that, trying to just reach that gap?
I would say for now, there has not been a challenge, believe it or not. People have been very open and receptive to this new project.
Yeah.
I am booked all the way to July. Churches and schools and charter schools and daycares. I am just blown away that people share the same sentiments and feelings and understand the core message of the importance of community, the importance of diversity.
Yeah.
Of having open-mindedness. And it's not just about law enforcement. It's about building character, building communities, building communication, right? It's about civility.
Right.
All of us just operating in a place of kindness and gratitude, you know, making this world a better place. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is that's going to take us to get there. Because I think in this day and age, we need everything we can get.
Everything.
Everything.
Everything. Everything. everything. I wear this shirt from one of the Christian apparels that I was telling you about, A Meaningful Mood. And one of them, it says, I do all the things because of the passage is, it says, I'm just out here doing all the things. And because of the passage that, you know, God is there to help you, you know, he's helped you in everything and everything that you're doing, you know, he's helping you. So I'm out here doing all the things because we need every ounce of that kindness and that goodness. Mm-hmm. And I think you hit, I was going to ask you like, what traits and what strength does a person need to kind of follow that path? And I wrote down, you saying earlier, ego depletion, empathy, ethics, you know, being able to communicate, being able to connect, being able to collaborate across the diversity platform, not worrying about, you know, trying to keep within those affinity groups, but really trying to broaden your thinking. So, oh, I just love it because we need to do it because we out here doing all the things.
Right. Yep. I love the E's and them C's. I'm telling you, some powerful words, some powerful words that can really change our community. And just thinking about how this project is just going to take, it's going to be a launching pad for other great things that I'm launching and just going into communities abroad, right? Mm-hmm. Helping villages, empowering girls, empowering these small, you know, these small, smaller departments that don't have the resources that Chicago have, LAPD have, NYPD have. They don't have that. They need someone to come in that can galvanize the community and really force us something that's truly magical, right? We can just learn how to just be on one accord. So that is what my focus is going to be. I have a year and a half left to retirement.
Yeah.
I am done after that. And this is just a beautiful segue
into this
chapter of my life. And I told my husband, I said, you know, like when you're young and you say, when I grow up, I want to be this, right? And we all have different life challenges and circumstances and we have to go to school and we have to get a job because we have to provide.
Yeah.
But I said, at the age of 44, I don't have to do anything. I can just be whatever it is that I choose to be. Mm-hmm. And that this project is not fueled by money.
Yeah.
But it's fueled by passion.
Yes.
And because though that action and the passion is just lining up, the doors are opening for me.
I love it.
It's a beautiful thing. It truly is when you can just be at a place where you can just say,
yeah, I got this. And this is why all this had happened. That puzzle, you could just see that puzzle coming together. All those pieces that you were questioning, why God, why God, why God? I said that I co-authored my first children's book and with a really good friend of mine and some things has changed in my life. And I said to her, why me? Why me? I just don't understand why me. You know, my trajectory was this way and I was doing that thing. And then this happened. And in my eyes, I feel like I've been, I've digressed because of it. And I'm like, why me? Why me? And she said, why not you? That's the question you should be asking. Why not you? Mm-hmm. What makes you so much better? So why not you?
Yeah.
And so every time I have my pity party, whether she knows it or not, I think about that. Like, why not me?
That's the beauty of life, that every day we get up, we get to write our own story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We get to write our own story.
Yeah.
And it's okay not to write a story. It's okay to just rest, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's okay to just rest and not do all the time. So
rest is the complete sentence. Rest.
Period. You don't need anything behind or after. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Goodwin, I only have a few more questions for you. And one of them is in 2022, you were awarded the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award by President Joe Biden. And he was recognizing your dedication to civic engagement and community service. And just sitting here talking to you, I can absolutely see why. I feel your energy, even though we're virtually and on Zoom, I feel that energy. So I can absolutely see why. I just think this is amazing and equally, excellent, and it exemplifies who you are. But I'm very interested to know, how did you get that phone call, or what were you doing when you got that notice at the time?
When I got the phone call, I said, "Who? What? What is this a joke?" You know, like you get those stuff in the mail, like sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, is this what like me, you know, just, and I think it's just because, like you said, we're always just doing the work. We're really not thinking about the accolades at the end. So when people just recognize the work that you do,
right,
that means a lot for people to say, oh my gosh, like, no, we, Adrian, like, she's been doing X, Y, and Z in the community. Like, no, she deserves this. So, you know, that just so much gratitude and just honored and humble that someone saw fit to say, I deserve that award for the work that I've done in the community. I guess since I was a little girl, my grandmother used to bring me to church and, you know, give out food during the pantries on Wednesdays. And, you know, like, come on, let's go. We're going to church. So my first act of service started from there. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I always tell my husband, I think that God put me here to serve. I seem to always have been serving. As far back as I can remember, my grandparents raised me and I was a help to them. I was a help to, you know, my cousins. I became, you know, I went into helps, you know, in the military. Here I am serving. Like, you know, and now I'm serving my family. Now I'm serving my, and I told him, I said, you know, I feel like at some point my something around my purpose is in servitude. Everything is around, you know, serving, you know. So I love it. I love it. So I wanted to ask you, how do you give back to yourself? Like, what does your self-care look like?
So my self-care, like I said, I love the water. I love just going to the park and sitting there. But because I just launched this book, I feel like I've been on the go with skates. And I told my husband, I just told him, I said, I'm going back to my 5 o'clock schedule starting next week. Like, I need that entire, like, 3 hours in the beginning of, like, meditating, working out in the gym, just reading my book. I've been off schedule. Yeah. So normally it's that 5 o'clock start and going to the gym, but
5 a.m.
5 a.m. Yeah.
Okay. 5 a.m. So you get up at 5 to try to give yourself. Yeah. I do the same. Like, my alarm goes off at 5:15 in the morning. And so I don't get to do 3 hours because my granddaughter has to be up by 6:05, 6:10. But that 5:15, my husband says, I'll get up because it's like that window is something, and it's something about morning time.
Yes.
Like, you can have that window at night, but my God, it is something about morning time where God, like, you can hear clear. Yeah.
What? Look, those are the best downloads. That's why I said I need to get back to that 5 a.m. start because I'm driving to work for them 40 minutes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, that's a good idea. Okay.
Yes.
I'm taking some notes. And I feel like we're so close. Like, we're besties in the morning time.
Yeah.
We're besties. And I'm downloading.
And it's loud and clear. It sets a precedent for your day.
Oh.
It really does.
Absolutely.
But it's just something about that morning time. So self-care. And then my other question for you is, who pours back into you, Dr. Goodwin? Like, you are pouring into everyone, your students, your children, your husband, your community, the law enforcement within itself. You're doing talks with your book, you know, you're doing all of this. You're gracing our platform. But who empowers you? Who pours back into you? Who ministers you?
Yeah. So, you know, I have sisters, not biological sisters, but, you know, sisters through my sorority, my best friends that I can lean on, that pray, that I can just chop it up with, that will pour into me, because you do need an outlet. You really do need this outlet. And like you said, you just always giving, but sometimes it's good to just receive. And if you're a giver, it's hard for you to receive. So I gotta work better with that, because that's a real thing. So just being open to receiving just the love and the support from others, and just having people pour into me. But I think that's really important, between that and the self-care and just that morning, those downloads.
Right.
Really hit a voice that, like you said, that fused the entire day. I'm on cloud 10. I'm like, I'm unstoppable. There's nothing I can't do. Like, what other project I want to tackle?
I love it. I definitely love it.
I call my husband all day, probably like, this girl. I'm like, oh my God, I just thought about this. I just thought about that. Maybe we should do this. He like, if you call me one more time with an idea, it's hilarious.
It's a lot. You sound like I have I have another friend who is an author, and she is also a trademark attorney. And her name is Deborah Mortimer. And she says, I actually interviewed her. And before we even started the interview, she gave me like four ideas that she had. And she was like, oh my God, I can't turn my brain off. And then she said, her husband said, honey, you have got to slow up. Just slow down. because your passion is like you're on fire in that energy, and then these things just start. And before you know it, eventually it manifests itself.
Yeah.
You know, but it comes in a rush at first, you know.
Mm. Just like this book, I talked about it for about 5 years. And then mm-hmm. during the pandemic, my husband said, sit down, mm-hmm. write the book, like go get paper from the copy machine, fold it in half so it can look like a book. And like, let's go. I don't care if you write your dedication page, write something. And
look,
I'm here now.
Yeah.
As a published author. So at the age of 44, like you can be anything you want to be.
You can be anything.
We have so many stories and just, you know, you hear this all the time. It's like, it's almost like cliche. You have so many stories and, you know, the grave is the richest place on the earth, but you can really create the life that you truly desire and that you want to live, that you want to live, not the next person that you want. Like your journey, your steps, big or small.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter. It could be something like, I'm going to change my hair. Yeah. I'm going to make my bed. I'm going to do a face mask on Thursday. Like,
whatever
that thing is for you to make you feel beautiful and confident.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
That's right. Well, just look at me. My children's book, I started writing it at 55. My first book, and I've been writing forever, but I never published anything.
Mm.
So 55, I started writing it. 56, my book was out. So it's never too late. Just do it. Yeah. Just do it. And it always helps, like your husband was your push. My husband and my friend really pushed me. Like, come on, you've been talking about it. Let's just do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need that little nudge, you know.
High five, we did it. Virtual high five.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Goodwin, I'm so happy. I feel like I need to reserve, you know, the right to call you back for a second interview after, especially when you get closer toward retiring, because I know there's going to be a next adventure in your life. And if I'm doing this platform, or I feel like I'll be doing something where I have to talk with people, I want to reserve that right to call you back. And before we wrap up, I always like to reach back and get a previous episode and ask my current interviewee about it. And so this episode I want to reach back from was from season 4, and it's episode 73, and it's called Check Their Phones. And the reason that episode came about is because, like I said to you, my grandjoys are with me now, and my 14-year-old, that phone girl, the phone is like an extension of her ear. Mm-hmm. And so, she's a good student, and, you know, she's a good athlete, but there was some hiccups along the way. And I try to give them their privacy, and I don't check their phones. And I checked her phone one time, and I just saw a lot of questionable things, not just from her, but just from her friends, like feeding into her spirit, just all kind of stuff, which would cause her energy to change as well. And it brought up the topic of me and my husband talking on that episode on, don't take for granted that just because your kids are an AB student, they're great athletes, they're doing great, that phone, that there's not a poison environment on that phone. With you being in law enforcement, can you share a little bit on your thoughts on that?
I think we are living in troubled times when we think about social media.
Mm-hmm.
We had the encyclopedia. We had to go to the store and get a newspaper. And we had a beeper.
Yeah.
And we had a rotary phone.
Mm-hmm.
And we only knew what happened outside our doors, and we came in when the streetlights went off.
Yep. Yeah.
We have too much access.
Access. That's it right there.
And it's troubling because it taps into their self-confidence, their body image, the need to feel acceptance, the need to chase likes and, you know, all of these different, you look beautiful, this is nice, and competition, that it really takes away from who they are.
And it's chasing likes instead of chasing genuine friendships and relationships. Yeah.
I say the longer we can keep them off, keep them off. Mm-hmm. You know, we're parents. You know, we have older two kids. The only thing they pretty much had around that age was just Facebook, mm-hmm. right? As they got a little older, probably high school, mm-hmm. they venture off into other platforms. Right. Imagine, of course, they watch YouTube, but I'm going to try to keep them off of having any platform as long as I can.
Yeah.
Just because I know the damage that it can cause if a child is not strong enough mm-hmm. to be able to say, or decipher, like, nope, that's not real. That's fake. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not good. Let me remove myself. Mm-hmm. But if you're not strong minded and you want to be accepted as a kid, which most kids do, they want to be with the popular kids. Right. They want to fit in. You know, there's a balance. But I think having these healthy dialogues, and I think that's where that negotiation comes back into, mm-hmm. is creating a space where they can come and talk, and that you're listening. You're actively listening with those skills. That mirroring. So what I hear you saying is that you feel isolated. You feel like you're being bullied and not lecturing them. Like, just listen. There's so much you can get out of a kid by just validating their feelings.
Yeah.
Because all they want to do is be heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I just, and it's crazy because you're, as a parent, as a grandparent, as a guardian, as whatever capacity mm-hmm. you are, for that child, is hard because you want them to have phones in case of emergencies, because there's so many craziness that's going on out here. So you want them to be able to contact you or call the police if they need to. But then it's like a double-edged sword. And the same thing with social media. I don't feel like it was created for some of the avenues that is being used right now.
Absolutely.
You know, when I look at documentaries on the initial creation, you know, even of Facebook, it was just mm-hmm. to have access to family.
Yeah.
You know, from college kids, you know, mm-hmm. and then, but to look at what is being used as right now, it's like we take stuff and we turn it into something so crazy and demonic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think the key is what you said, and what I keep saying is the access. The access is horrifying.
Yeah, but don't let them go to bed with their phones.
Mm-hmm.
I think if parents could do one thing, my advice is set a time mm-hmm. where they give you your phone, and that is it for the rest of the night. Mm-hmm. So if you figure they in school, they may have phones during lunchtime, a little mm-hmm. you know, transition between mm-hmm. class. Mm-hmm. Maybe on the bus coming back home to school, you know, coming mm-hmm. back home from school, homework. By 8 o'clock, 8:30, give me the phone. So that means you cut off 9, 10, 11, 12 of them mm-hmm. staying up all night on their phones. So you limit their access mm-hmm. just by taking their phones away.
Yeah. I was at a meeting at one of the schools, because I'm involved with like principal boards and superintendent boards. And I was at a meeting at one of the schools, and they were talking about the teachers were saying some of the highest rate they have of kids falling asleep in class. First period of the day, second period of the day, she said they're asleep, like dead sleep, not like nodding off, napping, mm-hmm. but head down, snoring, they're mm-hmm. asleep because they've been up all night on their phones. And a lot of our teachers are afraid to even ask a student, give me your phone. You know, you can't have your phone in here because of the repercussion that the child will come back at them about phones. So, yeah, it really has become this thing where we almost have no control. Mm-hmm. I heard one teacher say in one of our meetings that the parent is afraid to even take the phone away from the teenager, you know. Mm-hmm. And all I could do in my head as an African-American grandmother would be like, babe,
I
paid the bill on this phone. You know what I'm saying?
You start saying that him. Start waving them.
I had to, you know, Nelly, hold my mule, because if I tell you to give me your phone, you know, but I'm from the South. I'm old school, so it's just a little different, you know. But
it's the setting of the boundaries early on.
Mm-hmm.
You're the parent, right? You know, that's, you know, we learn and we grow, and there's no rule book. But mm-hmm. you know, they're not in charge at six. Mm-hmm. They're not in charge at seven. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. huh? You know,
they're not in charge at 14.
Right. But you see, if you allow it to happen early on, what you create when it's 14. So it's about setting those clear boundaries as parents. That's important.
And at my last view is, first of all, thank you so much. This has been such, I don't even feel like it was an interview. I really feel like we was chatting, like, you know, two friends. And I love that. You know, I say it all the time. You know, I've had interviews where it felt like an interview, like it felt like I was doing a job. But interviews like with you and like I was telling you with Dr. White, it just felt like organically, you know, we just had a conversation. But that conversation gave away so many good nuggets and so much wisdom, you know, on both parts, because iron truly sharpens iron. You know, so thank you so much for, you know, allowing Truth and Coffee Time to be a part of your story, you know, as you continue your journey. I'm just so grateful.
I'm grateful. I'm appreciative. I was just saying to myself, this has been the best interview I've been on, to be honest with you. Like, I was going back and thinking just because it was genuine and you're a great interviewer, like, you know, just the way you just allow things to flow and you kind of had an idea of what you wanted to ask, but you just let it, let's go down this trail.
Yeah.
Let's go down this trail. Like, you know, these are some great nuggets.
Yeah.
But whoever listens to this podcast is going to be filled with motivation, growth, inspiration, tips. Yes. I can't wait. I can't wait.
And that's what we want. You know, if it reaches one person, thank you, God, we did our job.
Yep, so absolutely.
Thank you again, Dr. Goodwin.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up, I want you to tell us, what is your current projects, what you have next, what's coming on the doctor's neck. And then also, I want you to hold your book up again. Tell them where to find your book. Where can they buy your book? I'm definitely getting it for the grandkids. So my 10-year-old, she loves to read. So she'll be reading that book to us.
Yeah, she's going to love this book. I'm going to actually turn to one of the pages.
Yes, definitely. I love it. I love your graphics too. Love it so much.
So you can get the book on Amazon. You can follow us at twinsinthecitybook.com on Instagram. Our website is Twins in the City Book. Facebook is Twins in the City Book. I'm excited about this. You know, people can support this by purchasing a book. They can go to the website. You can book me to come do readings, do activations, come do workshops. If you would love to partner or sponsor a 5-City book tour, there's a form on there for you to fill out. And I'm going to give you some exclusive information right now. This book is going to go under the umbrella of Little Civility Hub.
Oh.
So I'm starting a company, and it's just going to focus on diversity and inclusion, empathy and open-mindedness, just building characters, communities, and communication.
Yeah.
So looking forward to going into schools and, you know, building out that part of their curriculum and having workshops. And just so that we can have these healthy dialogues and hopefully it build better communities, it reduces bullying, you know, all of the wonderful things that can come out of this. So Little Civility Hub, just stay tuned. We are building it as I speak. And I'm just so excited about this, because that was a piece of the puzzle where I was trying to figure out, where am I going to be?
Yeah.
And everything is coming together right into this package. So I'm excited about this. And, you know, you could book me for public speaking. I travel, I do workshops. I'm just, if you like what you heard.
Yes.
On Truth and Coffee Time podcast, just to meet me in person, you're just going to fall in love.
Yes. And we're going to make sure that on our show notes, all of your contact information will be on there. I love it. You know, seek out our your local Boys and Girls Club. They're always looking for some literature. And I'm going to try my best to try and get you on some type of virtual webinar for our local boys. Because I really think that whole law in our children and filling that gap is important. So important, because of our environment, they're growing up afraid of the police, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just really think that there is an opportunity there to not just educate the police, but educate our children too.
Absolutely.
So I love that. Now, is there any more books on the rise?
Yes, so it's going to be a series. Thinking about, I'm like, you know what? Let's just keep rolling with this. I kind of like this. So yes, it is going to be a series. And if you are in, you know, it's going to be a series. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. So now, one other thing I want. Now, do you enjoy coffee? And if you do, what was one of your favorite coffee moments?
Oh, I love black coffee.
Oh, yeah, my husband did too. He always bothers me and tells me that I'm pimping out my coffee.
He's like, I like that term. Yeah, like, come on, don't dilute it. Like, come on. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, I love black coffee from Starbucks. Starbucks Club.
So in the morning, that 5 a.m. wake up, workout after workout, you get you some coffee and you.
I don't have it all the time. Maybe like twice a week.
Oh, girl, I don't know if I can make it.
I had some today. I don't have it all the time. I have to be in a mood for it, but definitely some black coffee with.
I don't think I can make it. Like when we get done, I'm going to get me a cup of coffee. I drink probably 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day.
You're never going to go to sleep, my dear.
Yes, I will. It doesn't bother me. I think my body is so immune to it. It's like, that's my nightcap.
Okay. I got you.
And lastly, what are some parting words or words of advice you would like to leave with our listeners?
So what I would like to leave is to do what it is that feels good to you. Forget the naysayers. Forget what you think sounds right, what doesn't sound right, what it should look like. Just follow your heart. Like, just think about that puzzle when you're trying to put the pieces together. You like, let me do the outline because I can see it clear. So that's just like taking that one step at a time, putting that one foot in front of the other until you build out what it is that you feel is a masterpiece in your life. Like, there's no reason for us to go another day not being happy. There's no reason for us to go another day without joy and without peace. But we can't look for people to create that, right? We need to detach from those words and from what people said that we weren't going to be or what we weren't good enough, and really just tap into who you are and just kind of keep that at the forefront of your mind. And it's okay to take a break and take a step back and reevaluate, but get back up, and you can do it. Get back up. And run your race from the words of Madison.
Yes, thank you, Madison. because we got to trust the process.
Trust the process. Yep, absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Goodwin. Thank you so
much. Thank you, Mom.
Thank you. I'm so appreciative. This was so good.
So it felt good to the soul.
I got all kind of notes.
It felt good to the soul. This is like a girl chat. This was good. It's like a bestie I've never met, and we just connected and vibed so well. I'm like, I might just have some coffee just because.
just to think about me. This was the concept of the book Chicken Noodle for Soup for the Soul. It really was like over that warm conversation. So I'm just so grateful. Thank you so much. I've gotten so many nuggets. My life took a change, and just I've looked at it in so many negative ways. And just lately, having all these great conversations with people, especially this one tonight, God keeps giving me that confirmation that don't worry, all those pieces are going to come together. Just trust the process, you know. And then this effective communication. That right there, I wrote it down. It sounds like what I heard you say was, I'm telling you, I love it. Thank you so much. And I pray to God that there are people out there that hear that, especially our parents, you know, and our grandparents, our guardians who are dealing with social media, and our teenagers and our kids, and you hear how we can effectively communicate and try to help our kids be the best that they can be. Because our future depends on it.
Absolutely.
It depends on it. So thank you again. Thank you to your family. Thank you for the late night interview. I appreciate it. Everyone, please know that Dr. Adrienne Goodwin, her information will be on our show notes. How to contact her, how to buy her book will be there. Look out for her and her new ventures that are coming. Her booking information will also be on our show notes. We are so grateful. And don't forget to follow us as well at Diverse Love or at Truth and Coffee Time. You can contact us at hello@diverselove.com or truthandcoffeetime@gmail.com or our website, www.diverselove.com or www.truthandcoffeetime.com. We are so grateful that you have allowed Adrienne Goodwin, author, hostage negotiator, detective, investigator, mother, wife, you know, to come into your home along with the Truth and Coffee Time podcast as we share our truth over coffee.
Thank you, friends, for hanging with us. We got you. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. And also, please follow us on IG, Facebook, and Twitter. Our social platform is at Diverse Love. That's DiverseLuv.
And don't forget, you can listen to our podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcast fix.
Thank you, friends. We love y'all for real.
Okay, me, take us out.
It's Truth and Coffee Time.
Help me not think about all my lows. Think of who you are sometimes. Girl, you always on my mind. Looking like it's Truth and Coffee Time. Tell me what you really want to know. Girl, it ain't